Robinhood Radio presents Between the Stacks, a weekly chat about our local libraries.
This is Gretchen Hochmeister, the director of the Hotchkiss Library in Sharon, and I'm joined today by Tammy Gaskill from the Rojan Library, our friends and neighbors in New York State. And we are here today to talk about several things, including how our libraries support the homeschooling community. I think you have maybe a little bit more active homeschool community in your area. Tammy, would you like to tell us what you guys do and a little bit about the people who homeschool maybe?
Sure. There are a number of homeschooling families in our area. I think a lot of them use the libraries in the county and go to different libraries for different activities. And in our library, what we have been doing in the last year, probably year and a half now, is hosting a once-a-month homeschool sort of field trip. We call it Adventure Wednesday. So it's one Wednesday a month, and we organize a trip to some local, a farm. We've been to the fire department. We've been to Art Omi, where they learn about art. So all different kinds of things in the region so that kids, have this opportunity that's been arranged for them by the library and the families really enjoy getting together for those trips. So we probably have 12 to 15 kids who participate on average. And occasionally we have a few more because like next week is spring break. And so we might have a few more joining us on anything we're doing on a day when school is out. But
for example, by the county system,
it is not. This is just done by our library, and
I think a lot of
these families then go to other libraries for other kinds of activities. But that's what we do. So, just for example, some of the things we've done in February, I guess it was, they took a trip to Camp Hill Village, which is a residential community for adults with developmental differences, where they saw the activities that they're engaged in, which include woodworking, weaving, candle making, growing of seeds, the seed garden. So they learned a lot up there. They said it was a really, really fabulous trip. Last month in March, they went to Full Circus Farm, where they got to meet some draft horses and dairy cows. And this month, I believe they're going to Equine Advocates in Belatia, which is a local animal sanctuary for horses and mules. So a lot of it is outdoors. A lot of it we do sometimes in partnership with the Columbia Land Conservancy. But we've also done more history-oriented programs. For example, we've been to Lindenwald, Martin Van Buren's home. We've been to the Copic Ironworks, where they learn about the early history of iron making in the region. So a variety of activities of that sort.
That sounds great. And that's something that do you seek funding for that?
We have not. We've been fortunate in that it really hasn't cost us anything. We just try to form partnerships with organizations and businesses and in the region. And they're happy to, have the kids come and have them. They went to an apple orchard last year. All kinds of local. What can I say? A lot of it, like I said, a lot of it's outdoors. A lot of it's farming related, but not all of it.
That's great. And I assume you probably also do the traditional services that we do provide to. There are just a few homeschooling families in our community. Unfortunately, the age range between the kids is quite wide, and so there's not a lot of common ground where, they could do things together. But they come into the library, of course, request a lot of books through ILL. If we don't have them, they check out a lot. We have one family that has 50-some books out right now. They're really good about bringing them back. We support them in that way. And they come to library programs, of course. But we don't have a network in this part of Connecticut that I'm aware of that connects homeschooling families. The last time the one family was in, a couple of weeks ago, she was telling me that there was a lot of advocacy work going on, that they were in Hartford because Connecticut is known to be one of the states with the least amount of control or oversight of homeschooling. And I believe currently families don't even have to report to their local school district that they are homeschooling. And there is a bill that has just passed the Connecticut Education Committee and is moving forward for a full House vote shortly, I believe in this session, that would increase oversight prompted by, you know, cases, around the country of abuse or neglect, which obviously is not the norm or the what is the experience of most homeschoolers. But because of those very prominent cases, one in which was in Connecticut last year, there's been this push for more regulation. And So there's concern among the homeschooling community about what that would mean. But again, I looked for numbers even online, and it said that it's, you know, probably very much underreported. So I don't know how many people in the state even homeschool.
Yeah. And I know a lot of the families we have are not necessarily local to our service area. They come from throughout the county and even perhaps Connecticut and Massachusetts.
Yeah, and I did mention to this one family, because she was looking for resources, to check out your library because I knew you had some sort of program. So it's an interesting thing. I know the number went up a lot during COVID, and I think it has gone down a little bit, but it's still higher than pre-COVID.
So, and I think you point out that one of the issues is for organized programs is their age range. And we used to have a weekly program in the library, but it is difficult when you've got, you know, kids ranging, you know, ours probably are now ranging from 11 down to 5, you know, and they do have different interests and different needs. And it was hard for us doing programs here in the library. We found that doing these sort of field trips kind of can capture the interest and of a wider age range of kids. So
that's great.
Easier.
Yeah, because science for someone who's 6 is very different than for an older sibling, right?
Yeah.
So how do you find the right person to lead those activities or share their experience? It's very different. But I think there's certainly things we can do to help people. We had a call last year, a phone call, someone asking if we had a space where a homeschool group could do a music recital. And our room was not large enough for the number of people they had. And I don't recall where they were from. But there's certainly people out there doing all kinds of interesting things. So why don't you tell me what you're reading these days and also what's popular over there at your circulation desk.
Okay, well, let's see. I just finished reading Andrew Miller's Land in Winter. It was a 2025 book shortlisted for the Booker. I wish I had read it a little earlier, like in the middle of January or February when we were in the middle of our harsh winter this year, because this is a story set in 1962-63, set in rural England, and it's focused on two neighboring couples, one a doctor and his wife, and the other a farming couple. Both wives are pregnant and get to know each other and become friends. But through this harsh winter, where people are really isolated in this rural area, the isolation sort of begins to reveal, leads to the revelation of a number of, you know, secrets and tensions in both marriages, which threatens to pull them apart. But so it's very much a novel exploring the inner lives of these people. The prose is very evocative. The mood is very, sets a very, what do I want to say, a lot of emotion and mood into the writing. So anyway, that I really enjoyed. I'm still grappling with what the ending means, so I'm not going to give that away.
Interesting. I remember when it came out and it looked really interesting. I'll have to take a look at that.
Yeah. And having just gone through a very long winter, it was interesting. Though I think I would have gotten more appreciation if I'd been reading it while I was in the midst of it. So what about you? What have you read lately?
I have two books going. I'm reading Language City by Ross Perlin, which is a nonfiction book by this person. He's a professor at Columbia of languages, but he also runs an institute in Lower Manhattan that is trying to preserve and promote the linguistic diversity of New York City. And he posits that the city is actually the most linguistically diverse place on the planet, and that there are, you know, hundreds, if not over 1,000 languages being spoken there on a daily basis, and that many of them are represented by their last speakers who are residing in New York. It's fascinating, and it's really, you know, a lot about the history of immigration to New York City and the different areas that have attracted different people and the efforts made by this small nonprofit that he's part of, where they have they record, they have an archive of written materials, they have people writing grammars and descriptive lists of words, where that, you know, for languages where there are only two or three people left, you know, and there are apartment buildings in Queens where like the entire apartment building is a whole village of people from somewhere in Asia, you know, and they're all there. A whole village has transplanted itself, and it's sort of the first stop in the United States before they move on to another place. It's really fascinating. And I'm also reading a novel called Helm by Sarah Hall.
Oh, yes.
I may have mentioned that last time. I can't remember. I'm still reading it. But it's very interesting about the only named wind in the United Kingdom. There's an actual wind called the Helm, kind of like the Santa Ana or, you know, other winds. And it's a really interesting take, trying to imagine human interaction with this very fierce wind that it just happens at one place in Cumbria in northern England. And it's a northeasterly cold wind that blows down this one slope of the what they call a fell or an escarpment. And it causes this big rolling cloud to form. And apparently it can blow so loud that it roars like a jet engine. And it happens in the winter and spring. And so this author imagines various human beings over the course of millennia interacting with this wind and also trying to understand the wind and at times control the wind. You know, is it a god? Is it a god speaking? Is it a force that could be harnessed into power all the way to today? And looking at, you know, meteorologists who would be studying it and contemplating climate change. So there are these recurring characters, I think six characters that keep coming back over the centuries. It's really, really very interesting and lovely writing. So I'm enjoying that. And what are your patrons taking out these days and requesting?
It's funny, we were just looking at the high demand holds list, and it's still the correspondent, Virginia Evans.
Here too.
Still at the top of the list, but we've got a few others coming along that have come out more recently, including Tayari Jones's newest book, Kin. She's the author of An American Marriage. Her new book is a story of two friends in the South, and a story of friendship, motherhood, race, class in the South.
Yeah, it's really great. Popular here, too.
Yeah. Also, Lauren Groff's new book, which is a collection of stories called Brawler. Mm-hmm. And just released also Tana French's The Keeper, which is the third and final novel, apparently, in her Cal Hooper trilogy, which is about a retired Chicago detective in rural Ireland.
The correspondent still super popular here, and I wonder if you've also had requests for Theo of Golden, which is sort of the next sleeper.
Yes.
you know, we have a long holds list on that one, and circulating the new John Grisham, or the more recent one, The Widow, the latest John Irving, Queen Esther. Still, the George Saunders Vigil is still very popular here, and also topping the holds list with correspondent and Theo of Golden is the new James Patterson, a Cross and Sampson novel. It's interesting. I looked at our digital collections as well, and for an ebook, Heart the Lover by Lily King, which I know you've talked about, is still really popular there. And interestingly enough, the audiobook of Wuthering Heights, I guess
I wonder
people
why
are returning to it because of the movie. So that great Emily Bronte book. I'm glad they're reading and listening to the book and getting the whole story as opposed to the half of the story that they tell in the movie, apparently. But it was interesting to see that that was high up on the list. So what events do you have coming up, programs? You always have good stuff
Well, we have the usual monthly book clubs and exercise classes and such. But this month, special events, because it's spring break next week here, we have a special books and dance event next Wednesday where children will be joining a performer who does music and movement educator. They'll be introduced to the basics of dance and stretch and looking for inspiration from books from the library. They'll also, then on Saturday the 11th, we have a Make Your Own Terrarium workshop for kids. So that has limited space. So if people are interested, they should contact the library to register for that. We're wrapping up some of our webinar series. We're doing countywide. We tend to do those in the winter, early spring, and then move away from that in the nicer months. So this month in April, we have on Monday the 13th, a webinar on FDR and the Four Freedoms. That's led by Jeff Urban, who's an educator at the Roosevelt Presidential Museum and Library. Then on the 15th, we have a tech lab on Google search. So if you're interested in finding better ways of searching for what you want online, that's a great program led by our resident tech guru, Pam Doran, who I know has been over in Sharon as well.
Yeah, we love Pam. Mm-hmm.
And then she's leading another webinar on April 29th on library apps. So we've got a number of different apps from Libby to Hoopla to Canopy to Blackstone Audio. We'll be covering all of those. So if you're interested in learning more about some of the digital resources the library has to offer, that's a great program to attend. National Library Week is this month, too, beginning April 19th. And we are kicking off that with a screening of The Librarians, the documentary that focuses on the challenges, the book challenges, particularly in Texas and Florida, but nationwide. That will be followed up by a discussion of the film here at the library. So hope we have a good turnout for that. And finally, it's also National Poetry Month this month. And we always do, we share poetry prompts with anybody who's interested. They get sent out by email. You can register by contacting the library. And then we are having a poetry writing workshop series led by local poet Phyllis Carrido. And that's at the end of the month, April 22nd and 29th, two Wednesday evenings. Again, space is limited. So if you're interested in those poetry writing workshops, give the library a call.
Sounds great.
Finally,
We will have Pam Doran as well. She was here last week, and she'll be back on Saturday the 11th for a new session on AI for artists, talking about ways that AI can be harnessed for art and the ethical challenges with that. So we're looking forward to that. We have a great program coming up on Sunday the 12th at 4 p.m. This is part of our 250th anniversary of the United States series, and we will have a program on 18th century household textiles with representatives from Cora Ginsburg, which is an organization that has an amazing collection of vintage and antique textiles, and we're really excited about that. It will be a presentation, but also we will be able to actually handle and touch some of these items and fabrics, which will be really exciting. We have a book reading and signing on the 19th of April, Sunday at 4, with Ian Gill called Searching for Billy. And this is a man who resides actually in the Philippines right now, and he's a journalist in Asia. And he unravels the story of his mother, very mysterious origins in the family going back to the tumultuous pre-war days in Hong Kong. That promises to be very interesting. And for National Library Week, we're very excited. We have our third annual community read aloud scheduled for the whole day from 9 to 5 on April 25th, which is a Saturday. And we are going to be reading out loud together in 10-minute slots. Johnny Tremaine, the wonderful children's classic from 1943 about an apprentice silversmith in Boston. And that book was written by Esther Forbes. She won the Newbery award for it, and you can go to our website and sign up for a 10-minute slot to read aloud. You can sign up for two if you wish. We've done this before. We've read Little Women, which is much longer. That took an entire weekend. And last year we read The Secret Garden. So this year we're tying it in with the 250th for the United States. So that should be really fun. We're looking forward to that. And we welcome readers from the whole region and area. So anybody listening or from other libraries who would like to sign up, we'd love to have you. We have refreshments and we sit in our beautiful reading room and you can come and go throughout. And if you don't want to read, you can also come and listen. And it's just a really lovely, empowering thing to do, to sit with people and read out loud. So we're excited about that. That's, I think, everything we have to cover today. So thank you, Tammy.
Thank you. And happy National Poetry Month.
Between the Stacks is produced at the facilities of Robin Hood Radio 91.9 FM, Sharon, Connecticut.